This is AC2GS. My name is Roy, and this is the Limark Technical Net. We're here every Sunday night at 8 p.m., whether there's an Oscar on or not. And thankfully, amateur radio operators come and visit us and participate and chat and exchange information. And I'm grateful for all of them and all of you. And once again, it's another 8 p.m. on Sunday night. Now, this technical net, as I've mentioned, has been going on for 40 years. Mostly under the care of Dick K2RIW, who became a silent key 2 years ago. And we continue it in his memory, and hopefully we take the opportunity to exchange a lot of information with each other, and inform and educate and have fun. If you're not having fun, you're doing it all wrong. So with that in mind, let me drop for a second, and I will give you my usual links. Okay. If you want to reach me and you can't get me on the radio, then email is an excellent source. That would be either for mailbag questions, if you can't ask a question on the technical net, but you would like to listen in and hear the answer, that's a mailbag question, or if you have a topic for discussion. It could be either that you want to discuss it, or you want to discuss it with the group here, or you want to hear other people discuss it, that's a topic. Puzzles. We're always looking for puzzles. Hopefully, I will have a little puzzle to share with you people later on in the TechNet. I'm always looking for puzzles, and so if you have one of a technical, you know, engineering, electronic, amateur radio, or just scientific, please share it with me, and if I can figure out a way of turning it into a TechNet puzzle, I will do my best. Also, if you want me to tap Paul on the shoulder and tell him, ask him to take a look at some space or NASA-related news story and comment, you can either email me at mailbag@ac2gs.com. Again, mailbag@ac2gs.com. Or you can mail him directly. His email address is spacenetreport@gmail.com. If you want to look at my link page, I have an extensive link page of interesting articles that I've seen throughout the week and YouTubes and other articles. They're available on my link page 24/7. You can reach it by just typing into your browser Roy, Romeo Oscar Yankee, .ac2gs.com, and that's my link page. If you want to join us in the chat room, and things were very busy last Sunday night in the chat room, you can either go to Limark's page and look for the link, or you could just type into your browser chat.ac2gs.com, and that'll bring you to the chat room. And I stream this on the Internet, so if you have people who can't get in through Echo Link or can't get in through a radio, just type into your browser technet.ac2gs.com, and that will give you an audio stream for most of the week. The only time it's down is when the computer crashes. Also want to remind everyone of Mike KC2NJI's AmateurRadio.tv, where he archives the technical net going back to September of 2006. Let me drop for a sec. Okay. Our plans for tonight are our usual night. We will ask for any questions of a technical nature. I will hope that the first few people who sign up are going to ask amateur radio related questions, although as the time progresses, we'll open it for any question of a scientific nature, any science that you want. I'll try my best. Medicine, even if you're curious about something. We do not treat nor diagnose over the radio, but general discussions are allowed. That should take us to, and I have a little puzzle question, so hopefully I'll find a nice place for that. That'll take us to 10:15, where Paul WS2N will present the SpaceNet report. That should take us to 11 o'clock, and I will return and wish you all well, tie a ribbon on it all, and call it a week. So that's my plan, if Mother Nature allows, and nothing like that strangeness that happened last Sunday happens to me again, but just in case, I do have contingency plans this time. Nevertheless, if anyone has any questions with technical nature, please give me your first name and your call sign.
KD2OGB Mobile, no questions at this time, just supporting.
KD2UAH with a question, Amy Rocco. Hi, Double. WS2N Paul with a question.
D2UD. Great job, boy. Thank you very much, Paul. D2I.
Alpha Delta 2, Delta Kilo.
KD2YYK with traffic of scientific nature.
Okay, very good. Let me read some of this out. I got Rocco, KD2UAH. I got Paul, WS2N. I got Wayne, KD2UDU. I got John, AD2DK. I got Sam, KD2YYK. Now, someone else doubled between other people announcing themselves. I wasn't quite sure if they wanted to be put on the list or they would just... signaling to support the net. So if you want to repeat your call sign and tell me whether you have a question or a comment or whether you just wanted to support the net, please do.
KD2OGB Mobile, no questions at this time, just supporting.
Whiskey 2 Bravo Zulu, question.
Okay, very good. We got a full list there. First, Rocco, KD2UAH, you had a question.
Yes, Roy. The question is, it's a radio-related question. Can you hear me, my audio, please, before I go further? Back to you.
Yeah, you sound fine here.
Okay, so the question is this. One of my radios, which is probably the best radio I have, it's a 9700 Nikon. All of a sudden, the radio is transmitting just fine, and I can't hear any audio. It sounds like it's deaf. All I hear is just white noise, static. I played around with all the settings and the tone squelches, and I don't think I have the any passband filters on or anything like that. I just don't understand why the radio is transmitting but not receiving. I had to monitor the reception. I'll let it drop. I had to monitor the reception from a second radio, this 991 that I'm listening to run right now. So I was just wondering if a radio can go bad like that, where the whole receiver section goes bad, or could it possibly some other setting? That's why I want to maybe just hear from the group, KD2UAH, back to the net.
Okay, very good, Rocco. Let me ask you a question. Have you tried to do a factory reset on it? Most modern radios do have that ability.
Yes, Roy. I went into the menu and first did a partial reset because I didn't want to lose my memories that I had programmed into the radio. And then after that did not work, I did a full reset. I put in the correct, the tone, 136.5. And last night I was talking to a couple of fellows, and they said the transmission was fine, but I could not hear them. I had to listen to their callback on my other radio. So that's why I'm kind of stumped. Back to the net.
Okay, that was a good move on your part, because a lot of times that'll solve a lot of things if the firmware gets janky or something happens. Some little bit gets flipped due to a gamma ray. I had that happen to my Flex radio recently. It kind of lessens the probability, at least in my opinion, that it is a faulty setting, and more likely something in one of the receiver stages, because, there are separate stages in radios that, only run through the receiver, block diagram and don't really enter into transmitter. So you can have a radio that transmits fine and a receiver that doesn't. So I do not own a 9700, and if anyone else out there does or has a better idea of what might be going wrong, please hit that push to talk.
NY2H.
Yes, Lou.
the receive side of this repeater is different than the transmit side. So the when you receive, 136.5 won't work. I think it's one below or one above that it's set for, but it's not 136.5 if you're trying to decode. So if the decoder is on, that might be the issue.
Okay, that's a good idea, Lou. Let me also ask Rocco, did you try and turn the squelch off? Because if that's the problem, then turning the squelch off would also allow you to hear the signals.
Okay, Stars and Lou, thank you for the input. Yeah, I know. I have all of my radios set. My first channel is the Limark with the 136.5, and I have it set both ways. I have it set where I don't have the tone squelch set on channel 1. Channel 2, I do have the tone squelch set to 127.3 because I think there's an upstate channel that's on 146.85 that somehow breaks in. I think we've heard them actually during the meetings. I can hit the Selden repeater from my house. I'm in Nassau County. And I tried the same thing with 136.5 on the Selden repeater, which I normally can transmit to but not hear. I'll let it drop. And the same thing happened even, in the 440 band for a couple of repeaters and some nets that I listened to out on the island further east. The same thing. It's both 2 meters and a 70-centimeter band where it's deaf. But the transmission, everyone says my audio is fine. Back to the net.
Okay, Rocco, let me ask you another question. Is there any frequency on the 2 meter or 70-centimeter band that you could actually receive? Or because I'm not quite sure. I got the idea that your receive is kind of out for both 70 centimeters and 2 meters. But are there repeaters that you hear or simplex signals that you hear on your radio still?
I don't believe so, Roy. And I had tried around. I know sometimes in the mornings I listen to one frequency, which is the East Coast Reflector. That's on 70 centimeters, and I haven't been able to hear them as well. They usually come in very clearly. As a matter of fact, I can even hear them on an HT. So, yeah, I have played around a little bit, and that's why I think something happened in the receiver stage that, and the radio is probably only about maybe 5 or 6 months old. KD2UAH for ID, back to the net.
KD2DK.
Yes, John.
Don't the receiver's performance on the East Coast Reflector repeater, unless it's been in the past day or so, because that repeater was down for about a week and a half.
Did you hear that, Rocco? That reflector has been down for a while. I unfortunately think it's a hardware problem at this point. It's in warranty, I think, the way that you mentioned how old it is. So, unfortunately, I think it's time to call up the boys at ICOM and talk about getting a return authorization.
Yeah, actually, no. I was all set to stop, packing it up back to ICOM. I'm going to call them tomorrow. And as for that East Coast reflector, I think Friday it was working because I was driving out east to work. And in my mobile in my car, I was actually able to get onto the round table. And that was about, about 8 o'clock in the morning. And I do know that they had trouble. KD2UAH, back to the net.
Okay, I think I got some kind of recommendation here. A person in the chat room says tell him to tune in to NOAAWX frequency. Offhand, I don't know what that is, but I'm sure someone out there does.
Yeah, the weather channel, like 162.40 or 162.55.
Okay, unfortunately, 2 meters and 70 centimeters is not what it once was. It's not quite as active, but it's not quite as silent as you find it. So again, My gut feeling is that there's something serious in one of the receiver circuits that are causing you the problem. And, you know, since it's still under warranty, the best people to deal with it would be ICOM. But if anyone else out there has any good ideas, please share.
Hey, two SCP.
Yes, Chris.
Looks like the headphone jack bypassing the speaker entirely.
Okay, that's an interesting thing. I have heard in the past some people where the headphone jack gets shorted out and loses the audio output. Did you test that aspect of your radio?
I didn't copy that. I heard something about a phone jack, but I don't know if it's the repeater or it's, you know, my radio that's breaking up, but it was barely audible. I think I heard that I should try seeing if the phone jack is part of the problem in terms of the speaker, but I can still hear the speaker. I mean, the speaker is just the hissing sound, you know, when you're tuning, just nobody speaking. So anyway, I don't want to take up much time. There's a lot of questions from other guys and other stations, and I'm going to just stay back and just hang in there and listen on the side, because I know you have a lot of other questions that want to be asked, but I'm going to send it back probably to the manufacturer. KD2UAH, back to the net. I'll be on the side.
Okay. Very good, Rocco. I wish you luck, and I'm sure they'll be able to fix it pretty quickly and turn it around to you. Chris, K2STP, you wanted to make a comment, though.
Thanks, Roy. K2STP. I just wanted to tell him there are a couple of settings for where the audio comes out. You can direct it to the speaker only, or you know, one of the jacks on the back. So take a look at those settings. I don't know where they are. It's in the main system menu. Make sure you have the audio on. But an easy thing to look at is put the scope on, and are you receiving anything on the scope and not hearing the audio, which would indicate a setting like that. Or you just not seeing anything on the scope and no audio. K2STP.
Okay, I mean, all those are good ideas, Chris. The fact that he's hearing a hiss kind of makes it unlikely to me that it's simply that the audio is going elsewhere. It shouldn't really bleed with a hiss into his speaker system. The fact that he did a full factory reset and the default wasn't for the speaker to be connected, I think is unlikely, but they're good bits of advice.
NY2H.
Yes, Lou.
I think that's a multi-mode rig. He can try, he's trying FM, maybe, I don't know if it goes down to the air frequencies, like 118 to 136 is AM. See if AM is working. Make sure his RF gain is up, if he's got an RF gain control.
Okay, all good advice. Again, I don't know under what situation you'd hear hum. You know, even if the gain was low, you wouldn't hear the hum, I would think. So, yeah, all good advice. But, you know, if it doesn't work out, thankfully, you're still under warranty. Anyway, on to our next person on the list, Paul, WS2N. What's your question or your topic for tonight?
Okay, this is WS2N. A quick question, really. I was speaking to somebody, another ham, and we were talking about the length of your ham ticket, you know, 10 years. And then the question came up, let's say you upgrade to general or to extra. Does it restart? You know, let's say you got your 3 years in and, you know, you upgrade. Does it restart at that 3 year point? Now you got another 10 years, or does it go back to the original date? And I said, well, you know, you put a life to me, I couldn't remember. So let me look up the ARRL site. And I went to that, and the weirdest thing came up saying that they're changing their website next Tuesday, they're going to have another completely different website. You're going to have to put your new password in. It's very strange. Anyway, I figured, let me ask. I'm sure somebody knows here. Back to you, Roy, WS2N.
Yeah, sure, Paul. By the way, someone tried to get in. I'll get to you in a moment. That's a wonderful, you've given me a wonderful opportunity, Paul, to mention something that I had scribbled in the margins that I wanted to mention. I got good and bad news. If you go for a higher class of license, you reset your expiration date. That's the good news. The bad news, if you do it after April 19th, you have to pay $35 because the FCC has finally announced that they are going to institute the payment for the renewal of licenses, vanity licenses, and upgrade of licenses. So the answer is simply, yeah, it resets to 10 years. You have 10 years on your license if you go from tech to general or general to extra. But if you do it after April 19th, you got to pay $35.
Okay, thanks for that, Roy. Yeah. Okay. Now I have the answer. Okay, that's what they're doing now. Yeah, I saw that email. One time they said it was going to be $50. ARRO somehow got that reversed. I think it should be zero. You have all these people volunteering, you know, standing out there in hurricanes and, you know, wildfires and stuff. And, you know, they should be paying the hams to get their upgrade. Anyway, very good. Thanks, Roy. AT2GS, WS2N.
KD2YYK.
Yes, Sam.
Hi, Roy. Just wanted to scratch my name off the list. It was a science question, actually, about homework, and I figured it out. Back to control.
Okay, consider it scratched out. Getting back to Paul's question, historically, I think the FCC sort of realized at one point that the trouble of billing amateur radio operators probably was more expensive than the fees. So that's when they kind of just said, the hell with it, and dropped the fees. They would really like us to just go away and do something quietly by ourselves and not bother them. But somewhere in the last administration, they decided that we were getting away with something, and they issued a suggestion for $50. The ARRL said, please don't do that to us, and they compromised with $35. I mean, it's worth $35. Hopefully no ham is going to say, that's too expensive. I'm going to become a Citizens Band guy. But yeah, that's life in the big city. I'm sure that will be subject to change eventually some future time. But for the time being, if you can scam paying up to renew your license before April 19th, try and do it and try and save yourself $35. Anyway, on to the next. There was someone who was trying to throw their call sign out during our conversation with Paul. If you're still out there and still want to make a comment, please ID.
AC2DAW, checking in, supporting the net.
Well, thank you very much. Next on our list is Wayne, KD2UDU. What's your question or topic for tonight?
Hi, Roy. I just said that I was listening. I don't have a question. You can go on to the next person. Thank you.
Okay, on to John, AD2DK. What's your question or topic for tonight, John?
No questions at this time. You know, I've been trying to think of one all week, and I had a whole list of them, but I can't remember them. I can't remember them at this time. So I'll just sit back and support the net with any technical contributions that may come up.
Okay, very good, John. We started with a long list. We seem to be ending with a short list. Next person up is Rich, W2BZ. What's your question for tonight, Rich?
ham radio technical related, and the other is medical related, coronavirus related. The first one is, and I know we've been over this, so please don't yell at me, but let me phrase it a different way. It has to do with the Smith chart. What was the Smith chart created for that it needed to solve? That's not even English. What was it created for to solve that wasn't apparent before? That's not even English either, but I think you get my gist. What problem was it created to solve? Go ahead.
AD2DK.
Yes, John, one of our electrical engineers. One of these centuries, I will figure out a nice way of describing and explaining in minute detail the Smith chart over a radio. It's not that difficult with illustrations. I've yet to figure out how to do it without illustrations. You know, it starts confusing people once you start saying things about normalizations and such. But John, please add to our knowledge with what you've been taught all through the years and experienced.
Thank you, Rich. So, first let me answer your question directly. What is a Smith chart? Well, what was it originally used for? It was a graphical method of designing impedance matching circuits. But in essence, what it is if you imagine, the XY axis representing resistance and reactance. If you take the Y axes and wrap them back around on itself, in essence, you get a Smith chart.
And why do you wrap it back around itself as opposed to a straight line?
It makes it continuous so that you can plot inductive and capacitive reactance and be able to wrap back around on itself, so as to be able to design compensation networks.
Design a what network, John? Maybe you could explain that in a little further detail. But I'm following you. I now know why they're circular in nature. Go ahead.
Roger that, Rick. I think the real reason is to make them look scary. But in reality, the whole concept is, you have a Z in and a Z out, right? And you need a plot where you can, continuously run through a circle that can represent both inductive reactance and capacitive reactance.
Okay, so once again, just if it's not even a question that could be answered, couldn't you do that with a straight line? That's what I keep coming back to. I know the chart itself does look scary. It looks like a maritime chart or an aeronautical chart rather than an electrical chart. But is it not possible to do the same thing with a straight line that's also continuous after all?
Well, I'm trying to figure out how to answer your question. So, the Smith chart has so many other uses that require it to be circular. Things like, stability analysis, For example, a bridge in the wind, right? Bridge in the wind, a gust of wind comes along, the bridge starts to oscillate, and then it comes back down again. So, you know, that's a damped oscillation. Whereas, you could have something where it runs away at resonance, and think the Coman Narrows Bridge. Getting into that, and then S parameters, and reflection coefficients, it can get complicated very, very quickly. But there's just a million uses for it. I would say nowadays there's fewer and fewer uses because there are computer tools that can do it for you much, much more simply. But in essence, it graphically solves math which could be difficult. And in the days before pocket calculators, things could get hairy real quickly.
WB2JXM.
Yes.
Yes, GXM.
Good evening, Roy. This is Rich, WB2GXM. My understanding of Smith charts is not complete by any means, but as I understand it, it makes graphically easy work of certain things like SWR. If you start at a certain point and use a protractor, not a protractor, you draw a complete circle using that one point. You have plot points for that SWR all around the curve. Somebody help me with this, but basically it's making a simple curve, making that easy work graphically rather than trying to solve it mathematically.
WA2VDH with a comment?
Yes, VDH.
Yeah, one of the, the most important thing for the Smith chart is that it gives you input impedance as a function of length from the load. So if you know the impedance of the line, what your load impedance is, you can find the impedance at any number, any fraction of a wavelength or multiple fractions from that load. Also, because it has the infinite impedance point on it, that's why it looks kind of scary. It all kind of compresses at one side. Go ahead.
82DK.
Yes, John.
Infinite impedance at the origin of the Smith point, Smith chart. To answer Rich's question is why is the inductive and capacitive reactances bent back on themselves? So infinity, it's undefined, and in theory, you can go directly from inductive to capacitive reactance mathematically at infinity. But the point being is all of those circles represent a point of equivalent resistance.
WI2U.
Yes, WI2U.
Hey, Roy, good evening. This is Mike, WY2U. I think we are losing a little bit about what the original question may have been. The original question, or at least one part of the original question, was what was the original intent of the Smith chart developed by a fellow by the name of Phil Smith? Originally, he and other engineers in his day came up time and time again with the necessity of solving transmission line equations by hand. In other words, having a given load impedance, which is a resistor, usually in series with some capacitive or inductive reactance, that was designated as a load, for example. And invariably, they wanted to figure out how that load translated back at the input end, which is usually the input side of a transmission line. These calculations sound easy, but if you want to do them over a number of frequencies, after a while, they get pretty darn tedious. Let me drop a minute. So what Smith did... did was he said, what would be a simple way to map any impedance, whether it be a short, combination of resistance or reactance, all the way up to an open, what would be a convenient way of mapping any impedance in one plane? Obviously, an XY graph wouldn't do it because one point will be at zero, another point is at infinity, and you can't have infinity on an XY plane because you don't have enough dynamic range in paper. But what he found out was if you make the chart in a series of circles where resistance circles end up inside of a boundary, let me start that over, where resistance circles have a center inside the boundary, and reactant circles have a center outside that boundary, it turns out you can map any impedance very conveniently. Let me drop again. So to make it convenient for transmission line calculations, he had to find the point of reference that would make it convenient, so he chose the center. And that's the impedance that represents the impedance of your transmission line. An RF work, usually around here in North America, is 50 ohms. Cable companies, for their work, use 75 ohms, but whatever. You can take any impedance, divide it by 50 ohms, and you can then map it somewhere in the circle, inside the circle called the Smith chart. And now you can rotate that impedance by so many degrees, which represent wavelengths of a transmission line, until you get to the desired point that you want, and it's a convenient way of graphically determining a match. In addition, any point on the transmission line that centers around the center has a constant what is called VSWR. So you can also calculate VSWR directly, which in itself can be a tedious calculation if you have to do it repetitively. So let me drop one more one last time. So again, you want to solve transmission line problems graphically, map any impedance from zero to infinity, resistance and reactance. At the same time, measure or calculate graphically what the VSWR of your system is, and then conveniently determine what you have to do to a transmission line which you're going to connect to it to try to match this impedance to whatever you want to do. It may or may not be 50 ohms. Sometimes you want to match an impedance to something other than 50 ohms, and that in itself gets to be a tedious calculation without a computer. But the Smith chart allows you to just rotate this impedance through usually one or two or more pieces of transmission line until you get that dot where you want, and that will assume a match. So back to Net, WI2U, and I hope I didn't confuse everybody.
82DK, great answer. Great answer. You did great.
AC2GS, do I have it? Okay, I heartily agree, Mike. You pinned it. You gave us probably what I think Rich wanted, which is the historical basis for the Smith chart. There are all kinds of fascinating things that you can extrapolate with the Smith chart. It allows you to calculate admittance and all kinds of interesting units that most hams don't really know what they are and don't want to know what they are. But you know, previous to that, everyone was kind of explaining different true, accurate aspects of the Smith chart. It was sort of like the old story of three blind men describing an elephant. But I think he gave a good synopsis of the history. For people out there who would like a good visual representation for a lot of what Mike mentioned, I do have it on my link page. If you go back to my link page for February 27th of this year, there is an entry that's titled number 349, Club Presentation, Smith Charts, the Nano VNA and Your Antenna Matching Network Design. Goes into a very nice illustrated description of a lot of the things that Mike mentioned over the air.
Believe it or not, Roy, even me, makes it a lot clearer now. And something that I got out of it is what John said, that with the advent of computer with computational power, it's almost in a way on its way out. John, could that be an accurate statement?
Yes and no.
The use of it to do impedance matching, you know, that can be done faster with computers nowadays. But being able to visualize an impedance or a change in impedance over frequency, a Smith chart can't be beat. You know, if you look at you know, things like vector network analyzers. And, you know, we hams can have one in our shack nowadays. It's a great time to be alive, you know, the nano VNA. One of the representations that the nano VNA uses to map impedance is indeed the Smith chart. So it's a great visualization tool, even if you're not using it for computations.
WY2U.
Yes, Mike.
Okay, Roy, very good. John, excellent. The one thing I would like to elaborate on, I think John mentioned it before, and one very good reason why some people, myself included, still may want to use a Smith chart, if you're designing RF microwave type amplifiers, inherently they're high gain devices somewhere, and invariably certain load impedances or certain input impedances will cause these devices to go unstable. So what John mentioned before was something called the stability circle. Anything within the circle is stable. Any impedance, perhaps, that you can realize inside a certain circle is stable. Anything outside of that is potentially unstable or unstable. That would be difficult to do with a regular computer because you don't see enough of it in front of you. But if you see it in a graphical form as a circle on this device called the Smith chart, it usually is very easy to see what's going on. Back to net, WY2U.
N2EPQ.
Yes.
Yes, this is N2EPQ. I worked in microwave years ago, and we used a Smith chart analyzer. I find this conversation extremely interesting. I found it totally useful because we would have things that we had to match up, and if it was a little bit capacitive or a little bit inductive with the impedance, you knew what would happen if you added inductance or added capacitance or where it should be located on the line. That's all I wanted to say is that you're talking about how it came to be, which is great, what it can do for you, and I'm just telling you what it did for me at working on these circuits because in microwave many times we had these things held together with like many screws held the circuit together, I mean the cabinet together, because if you took things apart with strip line circuitry, impedance changes. So you have to be able to put it all back together, meaning that when you add a little bit of capacitance or cut something out to get a little bit of inductance, you really want to have an idea of what's going on. The Smith chart was the way to go, and you didn't have to do a lot of calculation. You just looked, you saw where it was in the Smith chart. And in addition, when you use capacitance or inductance, it would follow the circle, whereas resistance, you know, is a bit different, sooner like a straight line. So anyway, that's my two cents. N2EPQ.
Okay, very good. What's your first name?
Name is Pete. And Pete, N2EPQ, you know, Pete Edstrom. Anyway, yeah, that's me.
Okay, very good, Pete. I'll give the people listening where I found a Smith chart to be a nice visual tool. You can I forget which. I think it was John. It might have been John and Mike mentioned that there are circles with constant VSWAs, standing wave ratios. We've talked before that antenna tuners are kind of weird in that they might match a VSWA, they might not match a VSWA. It also has to do with the phase angle involved in the impedances. And you can actually plot the standing wave ratio, and as you add lengths of jumper, you are basically going around that constant VSWA circle that's really different impedances with different phase angles that give you the same VSWA. So that's a nice, to me, a visual chart explaining why a given length of jumper cable will take an antenna that you cannot tune with a given antenna tuner and change the impedance to a point where it is in the antenna tuner's matching abilities to match it. So that's another good thing that you can do. Smith charts are great for visualization. If you just need the number and you don't need to see what's going on, computers are wonderful. But it's a beautiful thing when you get a nice visual representation of these things happening.
Okay, Roy, so besides what you just mentioned, the average ham, how would he get the most out of a Smith chart?
Well, again, it's more for educational purposes, I think, for the amateur radio operator. I think they could go an entire lifespan and still do the things that most hams do without one. But, you know, I think it's always nice to know. We talked earlier about how VNAs are able to plot their results on a Smith chart. And again, for some specific cases, it's very good for visualization. If you throw too much data, if you sweep a long enough frequency on a Smith chart, you end up with gibberish, because what happens is you'll just get spirals without any idea of where the frequency began, where it ended, and what some of it means, because it will write over itself. So I think it's good for visualization of concepts. I think that the average ham is better off to solve his complex impedance problems elsewhere.
Okay, the damn thing looks so sexy, though. You guys know what I mean. It looks just so sexy that I really want to learn how to use it take it to the point where a ham radio operator will actually, you know, get some real use out of it. I'd love to be able to do that just by looking at a Smith chart and knowing exactly what it's telling me. I guess it's telling me a lot of things, but I would really like to do that. All right, guys, thank you so much. I mean, believe it or not, I keep on saying that because this is me. If you knew me, well, maybe I'm overstating it or understating myself a bit too much, but it has cleared a lot up. Tonight has cleared a lot up about the Smith chart, and it's a great jumping off point for me, hopefully for other guys listening in, and gals. All right. Roy, the next one's a medical question, so I think I'll wait to see if there are any more technical or ham radio or related questions.
One more last comment, if I could, Roy, WI2U.
Yes, sure, Mike.
Okay, I just want to point out, and I'm talking about a so-called lossless transmission line, and 2 points of a lossless transmission line are worthy of note. If you plot, Roy, going back to what you said about a constant VSWR circle, it's a circle around the origin, wherever point impedance that is, the VSWR is constant. If you take that point, whatever it is, and rotate it through a half a wavelength of line, or for that matter, any multiple of a half wavelength of line, you would find out that you get right back to the same point again. So it turns out that any multiple of a half wave of line, half wave, one wave, one and a half, etc., assuming the line is lossless or close to lossless, that impedance will repeat itself. So a half wave of line or a multiple thereof is called an impedance repeater. Let me drop a minute. Very convenient, because this says you can take any impedance at the antenna. If you knew exactly what a half wavelength of line was, you can duplicate this impedance and mirror it right in the shack. And this way you know what your antenna load is doing. Another cardinal point would be, if you take any point on a VSWR circuit and rotate a circle rather and rotate it through a quarter wave of transmission line, you find out that point gets exactly on the opposite of the center of where it was, and inductance becomes capacitance, low impedance becomes high impedance, and it acts as if it was the inverse of that impedance. Take any impedance through a quarter wave of a line, draw a line through the center of the circle. As long as this falls back on the VSWR circle on the other side, it is now the impedance that you would get through a quarter wave. And that could be a convenient way of matching a circuit, too. And this happens any time you have odd multiples of a quarter wave. Not even, because if you have even, then you get back to a half wave condition again. But first, third, fifth, seventh, quarter waves of line act as impedance inverters. And those are two very important features that a transmission line type of analysis using a Smith chart can give you, convenient ways of putting impedances where you want them. And this way, sometimes it makes matching circuits easily, and it's very easy to see because you have it visually right in front of you on the chart. Back to net, WI2U.
Okay, thank you very much, Mike. This has been a great topic. Thank you, Rich, for bringing it on. Again, I live in fear of really ultimately going to the nitty-gritty, discussing. Everyone kind of mentioned normalization without using the word normalization, which probably is the best thing. It's kind of difficult to do a full description of Smith charts without some visual help. So if you're really interested, people out there, go to the link page, go back down to February 27th, pull up that YouTube. It's a fascinating exploration. And also for people who want to play around with their own Smith charts, although you're free to download a copy and print it, there's a nice program called SimSmith, which is a program simulation of a Smith chart. You can enter the data directly into the program, and it will draw the curves for you. You don't have to do things freehand or anything. So take a look. It's free software, SimSmith. Any other comments on this subject? Okay, very good. Once again, I am AC2GS. This is Limark's Technical Net. If anyone has any technical questions, comments, or topics they would like to discuss, please give me your first name and your call sign.
Rich, WB2GXM.
Yes, Rich.
All right, I have a question concerning vacuum tubes. Is there any way to test a vacuum tube using a multimeter without having a tube tester, because tube testers seem to be a thing of the past?
Well, that's an interesting question. Since I don't own any vacuum tubes, I don't have a great deal to share. I do have a suggestion. I happen to know a very friendly amateur radio operator who may or may not be listening in the background, good old Andy, WA2CDL. I think he has more than a few vacuum tube testers. The problem, as I would see it, is I guess if you had a lot of time and effort and extra other test equipment and a power supply to heat the element and such, You might fudge something together. It would probably be a somewhat major effort, but again, I'm not knowledgeable, except as a child going to my corner drugstore and doing vacuum tube tests for the family television sets and such. But if there's anyone out there who knows of a way of jury-rigging, sort of building their own jerry-rigged vacuum tube tester, please share.
KG2RY.
Yes, David.
I remember that when we went to the corner store, they had a vacuum tube tester there. You could test all your vacuum tubes there.
I gotta make it quick, but I'm listening to WHCDL. Can I ask a question?
Certainly.
Yeah, and hello to Rich. What, I have a tube test. If you need something tested, if you need a tube tested, let me know. But that wasn't actually the question, unless you want a tube tested. But I got to run because I'm getting ready for work tomorrow. So just give me a call and I can tell you what you need.
GXM, there is no particular tube at this time I'm testing. I just wondered if there was a procedure to test any vacuum tube without the use of a tube tester.
Yeah, it's you have to make a jury rig if you have an ohmmeter, a way of measuring the emission of the tube to see what the emission is, but you wouldn't really know if it's good because the emission could be low. You know, that's basically, you know, the current that's going through the tube from the cathode to the plate. A tube test is calibrated, which will give you an indication. I mean, you can jury rig something. It won't be accurate. You can also check the filaments just with an ohmmeter to see if they're lighting. Or you can just, if you know the filament voltage, you apply an AC voltage to the filament, or DC voltage, by the way, and see if the filament is good. But to actually check the emission and to check for shorts, it's more sophisticated as a tube test it would be. That's the only thing I can say right now about it.
Well, thanks, Andy.
Okay, I'm in the car and I just have to get out because I just have to go to the store. 73, have a good time, W82CDL. Good, Roy, back to you.
Wesley recognized. Thank you, Andy, 73. Have a nice, have pleasant dreams and don't work too hard. Just getting back to David to finish that up. Yeah, I too, as a child, the corner, the neighborhood drugstore, it was cost effective because we had vacuum tube based television sets and they would go out regularly and most people weren't going to call repairmen to change vacuum tubes. So I was the kid in fourth grade, fifth grade. I unscrewed the back, pulled the tubes, took the tubes to the corner, plugged them into the vacuum tube tester, found out if they were good or bad, found the bad ones. There was a case underneath that was locked. You called the cashier. They opened the little door. They took out the tube that you wanted. They sold it to you. I brought it back. I plugged it in, and my television came back. But those days are long gone. Very few people have vacuum tube-based equipment. It's not cost-effective to have local vacuum tube testers or storers of vacuum tubes to sell people. So them days are gone.
Well, you know, there's a lot of ham radio equipment that has the vacuum tubes in them, especially, and I think this is probably the most useful one, is the linear amplifier with tubes.
Yeah, well, I'll get to you in a moment, Wesley. I promise you. I just want to respond back, David. Yeah, I understand that vacuum tubes are not dead, but vacuum tubes have kind of collapsed as a commodity. The number of vacuum tubes sold in 1960 versus all of the vacuum tubes sold this past year are probably orders of magnitude less. So although it pays for amateur radio operators to know a guy that bought an old vacuum tube tester, it doesn't really pay for retail outlets to have that ability. It just is too few and far between. So, you can find vacuum tube testers on eBay. You can find hams that have vacuum tube testers. But no more will you find a drugstore with one in the corner unless someone's shut it down back in the 70s and hasn't renovated since then.
Well, you know, I don't remember the name of the company. They say they're reviving vacuum tubes. They're building, they're manufacturing vacuum tubes on a pretty certain scale.
Okay, there is a certain group of people who really, really love to have a vacuum tube someplace in their hi-fi amplification circuits. They talk about a warmth that vacuum tubes offer that solid state does not. So there probably will be some market. Again, it'll be orders of magnitude less than when everyone's radio and TV had a dozen or a half a dozen of them. Wesley, you wanted to say something?